podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks, 200 stations strong, all over the country, on Sunday, June 21st, 2020. This is episode 1706. Happy Father's Day, and enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. Well, hey, how are you today? Father's Day time to talk tech. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Here's the show where we talk about computers and we talk about the internet and smartphones. We talk about even smart watches. All that stuff. You know, anything with a chip in it. Home theater. Coming up, we're going to talk digital photography with our photo guy, Chris Marquardt. We'll talk the technology of automobiles with Sam Abul Samad. He's coming up in about 15, 20 minutes. All of that, anything with a chip in it. If you want to talk with me, if you want to join the conversation, as they say, 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still reach us, but you have to use Skype out or something like that, something that'll call a phone number in the U.S. Shouldn't cost you anything, though. That's the nice part, because it's toll free. We also have a website. Everything I say will be written in the book of the Tech Guy Labs for posterity, or you, next Tuesday. If you go, what did he say? I remember something, and you want to look it up. There's a search there and everything. Thank you, James DeRuvo. He's our official scribe. I don't know if he wears, you know, those sleeve garters, a green eye shade, and uses a quill pen. But I do imagine the scritch, scritch, scritch as he's writing right now, as he was writing out everything I say. We also, after the fact, on the website, we put the audio from the show. We even put video from the show because for some reason, who started that? Where did they start putting radio shows on the TV? I know Imus did that on MSNBC and on other channels later. And, of course, Howard Stern does it. I don't think Stern started it, though. I don't know. It's kind of a kooky idea because most of us in radio really are better without pictures. Let's put it that way. But that's all there if you want to see it. Just want to see, you know, my lair, which is carefully art decorated to look like a geek's lair with all sorts of geeky stuff behind it. That's the thing now. It's so funny when I see people on the big networks, you know, the ones that normally have studios and sets and camera crews and technical directors and floor directors and all that stuff. Those guys are at home now. Everybody's on Skype now, which is funny because I've been doing that for years. And it's funny to look and see what the... In fact, there's even a Twitter account called Rate My Skype Room where I don't know who it is, but he's funny. He takes, you know, a still shot of all these people who are appearing now on news from their house or wherever, and he rates it. He says, well, we'll give you a 5 out of 10 because you have an empty, big empty wall behind you or things like that. I think I flatter myself. I think my backdrop would probably get a 10 out of 10. It's certainly got a lot of junk in it. It looks like... It's kind of like a junk store, including, I mean, it's all, you know, found stuff from here and there, hither and yon, including my on-the-air sign. Every radio studio has to have an on-the-air sign so people won't barge in while you're talking. And my on-the-air sign is actually a bit of history. It's in that hippie script. It's hard to describe. But it's old hippie script, and it's instead of saying on the air, it says right on the air. Right on the air. I lifted it with permission from an old San Francisco album rock station, KSFX. I was working for another radio station. We had bought the signal. This was back in, must have been 84, I think, 1984. We had bought the station, and I was going to be the first DJ on the air. And the long-haired rock and roll guy put on his last song, something I like, you know, I don't remember what it was. Don't Fear the Reaper. Maybe it was The Doors. This is the end, my friend, the end. I bet it was. Perfect song. And he says, see ya, and he's going out the door. And as he's going, I say, hey, can I have your on-the-air sign? And he said, yeah, sure, man, whatever. He walks out the door. So I still have that. And my studio crew has lit it up. When I turn off the microphone, it goes off. And it comes back on. It's just like a real on-the-air sign. It's a hippie right on-the-air sign. I love it. Part of my decor, which you can see if you go to techguylabs.com and watch the video of the show. All of that, by the way, on the website is free. Techguylabs.com. We don't make you sign up. It's like the old days. Remember when the web, you'd go to a website, you'd just be there? Wow. You're just there. They didn't make me give them my email address. No cookie pop-up. Warning, we use cookies. Is that okay? None of that. Just let me in and I can look around. Wow. Isn't that cool? I wish the web were more like that, frankly. Not a lot of scripts running and pop-ups and ads and dancing monkeys. Remember those? Whatever. That's when it really started getting bad. You get the banner ads with, do you remember this? With a monkey that was going back and forth. Really annoying monkey. And then it would say, punch the monkey. And you try to click on the monkey, and of course, all you're really doing is clicking on that ad banner, and immediately it takes you off that website to some silly advertisement. I learned not to click the monkey. Do not click the monkey. Do not punch the monkey. Do not. My website has no monkeys to punch. I'm sorry. It's just stuff. Lots of stuff. From the shows, 1,706 shows, actually, going back to 2004. We've been doing this a while. And it's there for your reference. You know, so if you hear something on the air, and you say, what? You don't have to write it down. No heavy lifting for Dad today. No picking up a pen and paper and writing it down. Just remember techguylabs.com. You go there and you can find everything. James writes down everything, but we also put all the links in. And we divide it up into shows, and then we divide each show page up into hours. There's three, and then divide each hour up into segments. And so there's a lot of material there. And really, this is important. I always want to encourage people to do this. If you want to leave a comment or a suggestion, you're more than welcome. In that case, you do have to log in with your Twitter or Facebook or Google account, something, because we just want to slow spammers down. It's just a little speed bump for spam. You know how spammers are. So we just click that link, sign in, and then you can leave a comment. And it's very helpful. Thank you. I thank you in advance for doing that. Tomorrow, Apple will announce. Now, this is you're going to see a lot of the transition to ARM. But really what it is, and somebody said this, it's not x86 to ARM. It's Intel to Apple. Apple's going to announce that from, starting next year and going forward, Apple's going to put its own chips into its Macintosh computers. Huge for us geeks. This is a big story. For the rest of the world, who cares? You know, Microsoft did this. They actually make computers with ARM chips, Qualcomm's ARM chips in them. They're not very good. They're kind of slow. Apple will not, I don't think, make slow computers. We'll see. I think Apple's will be a little faster. Let's see what else. Apple is now closing stores again. Remember, Apple closed all the Chinese stores because of COVID-19, and then slowly, as the U.S. shut down, closed all its stores. Eventually, Apple closed its stores all over the world. You couldn't go into them; they were just shut down, which probably cost them a lot. They make a lot of money in those stores. In fact, the Apple stores are worth more per square foot than everybody except, I think, Tiffany, the jewelry store. They make a lot of money per square foot on those stores. Shut them all down. Then they reopened China slowly with precautions, temperature check, health check before you go in. You got to wear masks, the usual social distancing, limiting the number of people in the stores. all of that making it fairly safe. They wiped everything down as you touched it. They follow you around with a Clorox and go, oh, you touched it. Then they reopened the stores, or they said they were going to reopen the stores this month in the U.S., but they're going to close some of them back down, 11 stores across Florida, Arizona, North Carolina, and South Carolina, because it's back, baby. Yikes. Too bad. 8888 Ask Leo. We'll talk a little bit about the Apple event. I think they're going to also announce new hardware. Okay. So don't run into the newly opened Apple store and buy anything today. I know you want to get something for Dad. Actually, you could. Okay, I'm going to tell you a loophole. That actually, you could. You could go in. Dad says, I have to have a MacBook or a laptop, or I have to have a Mac Mini or an iMac. That's okay. Get it for him. If you get it today, when Apple announces the new thing tomorrow, and it's rumored that they might announce a new iMac, maybe a new Apple TV tomorrow. If they do that, you generally, when you buy something in an Apple store and the new thing is announced, you have a couple of weeks to say, hey, I want the new thing, and bring it back. And Dad could do that. Hey, I don't want this. I want the new thing. It's only $5,000 more, honey. Because that's, unfortunately, I think the new iMac might be really expensive. We'll see. We shall see. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Lines are open. Kim is here. She's taking your calls. We'll get to those in just a second. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm proud to introduce Kimmy Schaffer. She don't take no Schaffer. Hello, Kimmy Schaffer, the unbreakable phone angel. And thanks to the unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt for loaning us the theme song. I keep waiting for the cease and desist letter, but...
Me too.
It's perfect for you, because you call yourself Kimmy.
People call me Kimmy. I stopped calling myself Kimmy a long time ago, but... It's one of those things that stick.
Yeah. Well, it's cute, and you're cute, so it's okay. It's okay. If you were not cute, then it would be bad. Then it would be sarcastic to call you Kimmy, and you don't want that. It's like when they call me skinny. It's like, it's mean. It hurts my feelings.
You are skinny.
Yeah, no, thank you. Nice try, Kimmy. You haven't seen me in a while.
I just saw you.
What do they call that? The COVID-19 pounds?
Yeah.
That's what I got. I don't know why. I just thought, oh, it's okay. I'm just going to make myself feel better by eating everything I can see in the house.
Well, what else is there to do?
There isn't.
Yeah, that's the problem.
But I did. I have to say, I finally threw away the starter. I'm not making any more bread. That was a bad idea. Bacon bread, bacon cookies, bacon everything. Bacon, bacon, bacon. And even bacon, bacon. No more bacon. No more bacon. So, Kim, are you well?
I think so.
I don't mean like, do you have a virus? I mean, are you feeling well? Are you okay? You're doing all right.
I'm really getting over.
We're all over it. We're all over the quarantine.
It's too much.
It is. It's too much. But
I want to get back to real life.
But don't be those silly people out there partying. They were playing volleyball across the street. There were like 60 people, no masks, playing volleyball. That can't be good.
That's a lot of people.
Maybe they're all quarantined together, all 60 of them.
I don't think so.
No. Who should I talk to first here?
How about line one, John in St. Petersburg, Florida?
Always should start the show with line one. That seems sensible.
It seems sensible, but sometimes it doesn't happen that way.
For reasons only Kimmy knows.
Yep, exactly.
Hey, John in St. Pete, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Kimmy.
Oh. Hey, Leo, good to talk to you, and happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too.
I go in a few months ago with a router issue. I was helping my parents, and apparently we were double natting, and you helped us figure out how to get
it. Did it help? Did it fix it? Oh, hallelujah.
Yeah, we got it all fixed up.
Oh, hallelujah.
So thanks for that.
You're welcome.
So I'm working from home now, and I need to get a home computer set up. And
it is Father's Day after all. What a great way to celebrate.
Right.
Get yourself a computer. Yeah.
So I've heard you mention the Chrome box. And so right now I have a Chromebook. You know, it's just a tiny little laptop.
And do you like it?
I love it. I'm pretty much able to just do everything working from home off of that. But, you know, it's small, tiny little keyboard, tiny screen. And I guess if I log into some software, it may slow down just a little bit, I guess.
You can get, you know, the nice thing about Chromebooks at this point is it's, you can get anything you want. You can spend, but it's going to be up to you how much you want to spend. If you're willing to spend a lot of money, Google and others sell Chromebooks that are, you know, they have i7 processors and 16 gigs of RAM. They're just like regular laptops. The only difference is they only run Chrome OS. Although nowadays, Chrome OS, because it can run Android, it can run Linux, it's getting to be, it's a full computer if you really want it to be. So you might want to put that much horsepower in it. It really depends on how much you want to spend. What's your budget?
Well, I looked into the Chromebox that you mentioned, and I saw that was maybe around, you know, $500.
Well, even Chromeboxes, which, and by the way, most of the time we think of Chromebooks, which are laptops with the Chrome operating system on it, but they also make Chromeboxes, which are like Mac minis. They're just like the little box, and you supply keyboard, mouse, and monitor. So they can be a 27-inch monitor. And the range on those, the price range on those is pretty varied. Although, I would get an i5 if you can. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was kind of budgeting in, like, I'll have to buy a couple monitors.
Right.
And a keyboard and all that.
Right.
So there's that expense plus whatever I get. But I like the Chromebook, you know, running off of the operating system on that. I do pretty much everything out of Google Drive, so that works well for me.
That's the beauty of it. You log into that account on any Chromebook, it's all going to be there. Except for anything that you might have saved to the hard drive, which is why I always tell people, if you're going to use Chrome OS, don't save stuff to the hard drive. Asus makes a very nice Chromebox, their Chromebox 3, and it starts at $300. Again, if you want more power, spend more money. You can get, you know, more power, more processor. For $474, it's an i3, 4K graphics, so you can get a very nice monitor. That just means more graphics horsepower. You can even, you know, go all the way up to an i7 if you want with 128 gig SSD. That's going to be almost $1,000. So if you're going to get a Chromebox, I love the Asus, A-S-U-S. Hang on if you want. I'll answer some more questions. But meanwhile, Sam's coming up. I did it to you again. Sorry, John.
no problem.
We're still on. It's the podcast part of the show, so you'll still be heard.
Well, yeah, so if I can throw one more wrench into it. I've, you know, been trying to up my tech game a little bit. I've been listening to you, and I, you know, it sounds like all the in crowd, the cool kids, are doing Linux, and I'm learning a little bit about that, but I've never used it before. So how would someone go about, like, if I'm buying a new computer? I mean, you don't really buy a Linux computer, right?
You can. There are companies. No, there are companies that sell them. System 76. And really, remember, the Chrome OS is Linux. It's just Linux. It's locked, heavily locked down. But you can, even on your existing Chromebook, they will let you put Linux on it using a technique. It's built in now into Chrome OS. So you can have a little bit of Linux in your Chrome OS if you want to play with it, and then drop back into Chrome OS anytime you feel like it. So that's kind of the halfway step. But if you want to buy a Linux computer, almost any Windows computer can install Linux, except for the really, some of them are so locked down that they aren't great for Linux. If, you know, my favorite Linux laptops, and Lenovo even sells their laptops. Both Dell and Lenovo now sell laptops with Linux on it. But my favorite would be Lenovo. But you're going to spend a little bit more money now.
Okay. Yeah, I know I don't want Windows, and I've liked using Chrome.
Good.
So,
good.
You know, the options are of what's out there that I'm going to want to have a home setup. I was just trying to work through the progression on what to get.
Well, you know, it's completely reasonable to get a Chromebox, save a little money, and taste test Linux inside it. And that's official now. All everything with Chrome OS now can run Linux going forward. It's an easy thing to do. And actually, the setup of it and stuff will teach you a little bit about how Linux works, too. It's not a bad exercise. But if you want to get a Linux laptop, you know, I don't want to discourage it. I feel like if you like Chrome OS, you'll love Linux. It's all the power of a Windows or Mac machine, but more secure, more control. It's not as different as it sounds, to be honest.
Okay.
I think you're going to be surprised at how much it's like running Windows. I run Linux everywhere now, and I'm Linux and Mac, and I'm very happy with it. I really love it. So that's also an option for you. You know, it depends how adventurous you want to get. I wouldn't, when you're first starting, try to make that your main computer. That's your fun computer, as long as you've got something else you can use to do the work you need to do.
Okay. So you think a Chromebox, though, if I went that route, that could probably power pretty much anything that I want to do?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
If you've been comfortable with Chrome OS up to now, you don't feel hampered by it, then just getting a Chromebox will give you more power, more speed, a bigger screen, a real keyboard, a real mouse. It'll make you feel better, a little bit better, you know, like you're using a computer.
Okay. Awesome. You've been very helpful. Thank you.
Hey, it's great. Happy Father's Day, John. Great
okay,
to
thanks.
Talk to you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and here he is all the way from the Moda City. Well, right next to it, Ypsilanti, Michigan. Do they call Ypsilanti the Motor City Junior?
Not exactly. You know, we're about 35 miles west of Detroit. You know, I mean, generally, because almost nobody's ever heard of Ypsilanti unless you're from here. So I just say from the Detroit area.
The Detroit area.
You know,
but I mean, actually, Ford's
Michigan,
Rouge River plant, that big Rouge factory, isn't in Detroit either. It's in Dearborn.
No. Yeah.
So it's in the motor area.
It's right next door to Detroit, though.
Well, next door is not Detroit. I'm just saying. You're next door to Detroit, too, if it's a very long door or you got a long driveway. Sam Abul Samad is our... Prince, I'm silly today. Principal researcher. It's because my shirt has flamingos on it.
What's wrong with
it's
that?
It's dad jokes. It's going to be dad jokes all the way down. I'm just telling you.
A little silliness is always a good thing.
Sam's principal researcher at Guidehouse Insights. His great car podcast is Wheel Bearings at wheelbearings.media. And he joins us every week. Looks like he's got is that a Tesla in there with that big screen?
No, it's not.
I know what it is.
What you're going to have soon.
I know what it is. I recognize the knob on the bottom of the screen. That there's a Mustang Mach-E.
Logo on the steering wheel?
Yeah, it's got the little horsey on it.
Yep.
I actually got to sit in one at CES in January and was really impressed because it doesn't outwardly, it looks like it's a crossover. It looks like an SUV a little more than a Mustang. But it's got the Mustang lights front and back.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sat in the bucket seat, it was just like my old Mustang. The wheel looked the same. The armrest was. I felt very Mustangy. All I understand
that was the goal.
They're going to put recordings in the cabin with a. Is that
true? It won't be quite like that rumble, but you know, it'll be something that, you know, kind of gives you the idea that this is a performance vehicle. So, you know. It's not going to, I mean, there's nothing quite like the sound of, and feel of a big V8 engine.
Yeah. But, no,
you know,
I know.
Getting some other advantages out of this.
I know. I had the V8 5.0 Mustang. It was nice. I really enjoyed that. It was way more than
this thing will be quicker than your 5.5-liter Mustang.
You're kidding.
No, it'll be quicker.
So we're talking about Ford's electric Mach-E. It's not their first electric vehicle, but it is kind of the first one that doesn't look like a compliance car. It's really exciting, the Mach-E, which
is the first one that was designed from the ground up as an EV. But that's not the only thing that's unique about this car. And, you know, the Mach-E, one of the things that's special about it for Ford and, you know, that really signals the direction the auto industry is going is that everybody has learned, you know, of all the things that Tesla's done, probably the most important innovation that Tesla's really had has been the idea of the software-defined car, where, you know, you build in hardware and then so many of the features and functions of the vehicle are actually defined in software. And for the first time, you know, with Tesla, you had cars that could be upgraded once they were in the field, once they had been sold to customers. And, you know, it's taken a while for the rest of the industry to catch up, but they're doing that starting this year. GM's got a new electrical architecture on their vehicles that are coming out this year that allows them to do over-the-air software updates. And the Mustang Mach-E and other models that are coming out that are going to be announced in the coming weeks also have this idea of the software-defined vehicle. Earlier this week, Ford made an announcement about their new Active Drive Assist system.
I saw that. I'm seeing every Mach-E story there is. But I saw that. They're going to use crowdsourced information to help you decide how many miles you have left. That's always a concern in electronic vehicles.
That's actually another feature.
Oh, that's a different one.
Their intelligent range estimation.
What is this you're talking about then?
So Active Drive Assist is their hands-free driving assist system.
Oh.
So it's like GM Super Cruise.
Yeah.
Or like
Tesla's Autopilot, right? Off.
Yeah, well, except with Autopilot, technically you're supposed to keep your hands on the wheel at all times.
Which is, by the way, an excellent idea, given that it might drive you into a guardrail at any moment.
Right. So Active Drive Assist will actually be like GM Super Cruise. It'll be a hands-off system. So they have an infrared camera, actually three infrared cameras in the dashboard. Watching you to make sure that you're watching the road.
Wow.
But then once you activate the system, you can actually take your hands off the wheel, just like we did in the Cadillac with Super Cruise.
So scary. And then,
yeah, but once you get used to it, it actually works really well.
And then the fun thing is, Sam says, okay, now look away from the road. And I'm going 65 miles an hour down the freeway. And I couldn't bring myself to do it. So I covered my face, pretended that I wasn't looking, but I peeked through my fingers. And sure enough, the car got angry. It said, you're not paying attention.
Right.
Shook me.
And Ford's doing the same thing.
Are they going to do the shake?
I'm not sure exactly what the feedback's going to be. I don't think it'll be a shake because I don't think Ford's doing the vibrating seat, the haptic seat, the way GM is. But they'll have something in there that gives you an alert,
big loud
tells
alarm.
You to pay attention.
Look at the road. Look at the road. I actually like that because sometimes, not so much recently, but when I used to commute a long time, I'd get sleepy at the end of the day. And it would be nice to have something that would say, wake up, pay attention, you're not looking. That's a very big thing.
Yeah, and this will be able to do that as well. This is one of the nice things about having a monitor. And it, you know, it's very similar. It's the same concept as what Apple does with the iPhone Face ID.
Right.
Where it's using infrared emitters to illuminate your face. And then, looking, it's not as high resolution as Apple because they're not doing authentication. They're only using it to detect where you're looking. You know, are you looking at the road, watching the road? Or, if you're nodding off and your head's drooping down, then it'll also give you alerts for that as well.
That's fantastic.
But, the thing about what Ford's doing with Active Drive Assist is it won't be available at launch when the car goes on sale later this fall. But you'll be able to get the hardware will be built in. So depending on which trim level you get, some trim levels, I think including the one you're getting, the launch edition, will have what they're calling the active prep package with the extra sensors built into the car as standard equipment.
So it'll just
on
be a software
base trim
update.
Level, it'll be an extra cost option.
Okay.
And then next year, sometime in 2021, when the software is all ready, then they will do an over-the-air update to enable that functionality.
As a tech guy, I like the idea of a software updatable car. You know, historically, cars, you buy it, that's it. Not going to change until you get a new one. Maybe you'll change the tires, change the oil, but nothing else. The capabilities aren't going to change. And the Tesla introduced me to this. I know it's a little scary for some people. Like, my wife said, this car is a beta vehicle. I want to wait till the release version, and we'll see what Ford does. But now I want to point out, when you say I'm getting a Mach-E, I'm actually paying my money. I'm buying it.
Oh, yes.
They're not giving
me
one. I want to be very. I don't take freebies like that. But it's time for a new car, and I am a big proponent of electric vehicles. So here in California, we've got solar panels, many days of sun. It's just a great way to go.
It'll work out fantastic for you.
Yeah.
And you know, this is just the first of a number of additional, you know, I mean, obviously all Teslas have this capability, this over-the-air update capability, but we're going to, in the next, over the next, including at least two more vehicles this week that I can't talk about yet. And then over the next several weeks, there'll be a number of additional new models announced from numerous automakers that have this software-defined vehicle capability.
Interesting. Well, yeah. Will you talk about it next week, maybe?
Absolutely. Right. Pay, you know, watch my Twitter on space. Tuesday.
Okay.
And then on Thursday as well.
Are you Sam Abul Samid on Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. ABUELSAMID. Abuel Samid. Hey, do you have a blog?
I do. I don't post much on my personal blog. We do post some stuff on the Wheel Bearings site. And, of course, I also contribute to Forbes. So I write more stuff on Forbes and, on the GuideHouseInsights.com website. We post stuff there as well.
Thanks, Sam. Car guy, Sam Abul Samid. Oh, I'm getting really excited. So are they still... Are they still on track for the release?
Yeah. The job one, because of the shutdown with the pandemic, they had to push that back by about 6 or 8 weeks. So it was supposed to start production in August. It's going to start production late September, early October now. You should still get it before the end of the year.
Gosh, I'm so excited. That's perfect for me because we bought or leased this Audi for Lisa Christmas after it was like the day after Christmas, so the lease ends right then. So as long as they have it out by the end of the year, I'm golden.
Yep,
sounds like I'm gonna really like this car.
I think you will. I'm really looking forward to getting a chance to drive it.
I am too. I'm really excited. Oh man, and and I love the range. I apologize for distracting you with that crowdsourced range stuff, but I thought that was kind of interesting too.
Yeah, you know, and this is you know, some elements of this have been already used in other EVs. This idea of incorporating having 3D map data that includes the terrain information, the elevation information, and factoring that into the range calculation, knowing if you're using navigation, knowing where you're going, and factoring in traffic information. So being able to pull in a variety of different sources to give you a more accurate model of your range estimate.
Yeah.
As well as taken from your own personal driving history.
Yeah, I think that's going to be. We'll see, because one thing most people don't want to see is a fluctuating range.
Yeah, that's the key is, you want it to be reflective of what you're actually doing, but you don't want to constantly bouncing around.
Right. You're going to get 32 miles, 31, 30, 34, 32. Yeah, it's not good. So they'll have a way of figuring that out. But that's the beauty of software updatable vehicles is you can refine that over time.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's just fascinating.
And Tesla's certainly done that, repeatedly. Yeah. They do that on a pretty regular basis.
I got updates monthly, easily,
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was always interesting.
Ford's promised that they're going to be pushing out regular updates for the Mach-E and for their other vehicles that are upcoming that use a similar architecture.
Oh, interesting. So this is the beginning of a larger platform.
Yeah, I mean, the whole industry is moving in this direction. VW is doing it with their new vehicles. GM's doing it with their new vehicles that are launching this year. And there's going to be a big announcement on Tuesday that's coming out about another manufacturer that's making some big changes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Going to get it in red. Fire engine red. Make my wife happy.
Are you going to go for the red instead of the gray?
Yeah.
Okay.
Lisa loves red. My reservation is the gray. But after seeing it at CES, I thought, maybe I'll go with the red.
Yeah, and you have right up until the time when they actually start doing the orders, to pick whatever color and options you want at that time.
Right. Yeah, I figured that. But the most important thing is the first edition or whatever is going to have all that update stuff.
Yeah, it should have all those features on there as standard equipment on the first edition.
That's really exciting. That's really exciting. Yeah. First edition. I know. All right. Thank you, Sam. Have a great day. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
I will see
you. Spent the morning out at the lake paddling around with my dog and my paddleboard.
Nice. How wonderful is that?
That was great.
See you next week.
All right. See you next week, Leo.
Bye-bye.
Oh, what a good choice. Thank you, Lady Laura. A nice Father's Day song. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. JP on the line from Orange County, California. Hello, JP.
How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, lovely as ever.
Oh, how lovely can you be? That's awesome.
Okay. I'm limitless, right?
Limitless lovely.
Exactly.
What's up?
Question on 360 product turntables, if you have some insight on that.
I don't have a 360 product turntable. Tell me what you're wondering.
There's different, obviously there's different sizes and different qualities. I just want to know what they had to offer on, if you knew a little bit about.
I don't. Now, I should mention this is not a record turntable. This is for photographers, and it's a cool idea.
Yeah, you go on a website, then you can scroll back and forth to look at the product from all angles.
So it's making a 360 of the product. That's really interesting. Yeah. Now, the only thing I would say about that is the software is getting so good now that I don't know if you'll need this kind of extra mechanical help to do these 360s. And I'll tell you why I'm thinking this. I've been playing with a program on the iPhone called Belus 3D, BELUS, the number 3D. It's a free program, and it lets you – two L's, I'm sorry, BELLUS. It lets you create using the iPhone's front camera. And this is the key. These new iPhone front cameras have, as Sam was talking about the camera in the Mustang, sonar and depth sensing. So they can actually, by themselves, do a very credible 3D render of an object. They've designed it for your face. You're listening to the radio, but I'll still show you if you can imagine as you will. You put your face in it, and then it says tap the scan button. It tells you to look at the camera and then turn your head left and then turn your head right. Now, that's what that turntable would do. And then once it gets a full 360-degree scan in about 30 seconds, and that's the thing that's amazing, of 30 seconds of processing, it is able to render a surprisingly realistic 3D head. Now, I was talking while I was doing it, but it's done now. And I've got my headphones on. I'm talking. And I didn't need to put myself on a turntable and rotate me. Now, you see immediately some of the limitations. I've got a hole in my head because it was only left and right. It wasn't up and down. And there's no back of my head. But I don't think it would be so difficult do this.
Mainly the software, and I'm using DSLR cameras. It's a like professional product.
Yeah, and that's the issue is this is taking advantage of some very sophisticated inbuilt 3D modeling cameras. So, you know, I don't expect it's not going to be the same as a DSLR and this turntable, but I can't imagine that it's going to be that long before. You know, what you might end up doing is getting an attachment for your camera or something like that. This is, you're obviously a professional photographer, right, JP?
Yeah.
What kind of stuff do you do?
I mainly do action sports. I've got a question there too, but I'll call you back another time.
But let's finish this thing first. So
yeah, I do a lot of in water, like swimming, water photography and stuff, but I supplement my income by doing product photography.
Yeah, right now, being a good product photographer be a great thing, right? They mail you the product, you take great pictures. So this is an example, and as a photographer, I know you're well aware of this, of the move towards computational photography. So that the physical gear, the lenses, the camera, becomes less important as the software becomes more important. And I suspect, you know, look, you're going to make money on this thing, so this probably is a sense. Does it have a connection to the camera?
Yeah, they do. There's some are connected. You can connect it to your computer or you can connect it to your camera.
Because the camera would have to know when, okay, now take a picture now,
exactly.
As that thing rotates.
You set it to say how many photographs you want to take,
right?
In a full 360, and then it goes through the motion and takes the shots as it goes along.
Let me ask around, because of course you may know I work with some very interesting photographers who probably are well aware of the Iconosys, but I am not. I have seen these before. In fact, I've even seen people do their own. I think we bought one, come to think of it, way back when, but it wasn't tied to the camera. But we wanted to do product shots on some of our shows where I just put something on this turntable and it would slowly turn, right? Yeah. And honestly, I bet you to do that as a poor man's Iconosys, and you just shoot the pictures. Again, the software is what's critical. Afterwards, building a pano, except you're building a 360-degree pano. Does it come with software?
I didn't buy one yet. I'm just looking online to try and see. I'm just kind of toying with the idea.
How much is it?
They range, obviously, but there's one called Orange Monkey that's about $139.
Oh, that's not bad. I thought maybe
$5,000 or more.
Yeah, you remember when people were doing gigapan photography? That was all the rage, right? And you'd get this device that would, move your camera and take a million pictures, and then you'd get this incredibly high resolution single image. But those devices were pretty expensive. So if they're only charging a couple $100 for this, I think it might be worth checking it out.
They learned to work, at least, dipping your toe in it and just seeing what happens. And then from there, I'll probably end up having to buy some more expensive, bigger.
Just
things.
Understand that in 5 years, you'll go, oh, remember when we had to use a turntable to do this? Honestly, I think that's how fast it's moving. I mean, these.
Yeah, it's like the 1 gigabyte cards that go in the camera.
Precisely. And you're used to it. That's how it is in photography. Yeah. Tell me, so what else did you want to know? Well, actually, before you do that, let me do a quick break, and then we'll come back and we can talk more. I always, me. I love talking about photography. And when Chris Marquardt comes on in about 45 minutes, I'll ask him if he's used the turntable at all.
Okay.
Because maybe he has. We're talking to JP, photographer in Orange County, do a swimming and sport photography. Do you have an underwater housing that you use for that?
It's called a splash housing, which is it's a just above water housing.
Got it. So if you get a little splash, it's okay.
But not very.
Yeah.
Well, it gets thrashed. I mean, really thrashed. But you can use it underwater, but it's just not. They're not made to go deep depth like a dive housing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was one of the questions. I've got someone making me a new housing. I'm trying to figure out exactly. Where to go on a new camera body. And I know that obviously the mirrorless is, I'm in
are
the
you a Nikon
area.
You're Canon?
I'm a Canon guy.
Okay.
Canon guy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to switch out all my lenses and all my gear and kind of shift things too far. But
you don't want to go Sony, but Canon and Nikon both, they're slow,
adapters.
But they're slowly moving over to the mirrorless because they realize this is the future. So Canon has that EOS R. At first, when it first came out, I think it was very limited. They didn't want to cannibalize their mirror market. But I think times are changing a little bit. And I think the R body, a lot of people are getting more and more excited about the R body. I use Sony A7s, which I really like. They're very compact. I mainly moved to them because my 5D Mark IV felt like it weighed 100 pounds. And I have to say that mirrorless is a great way to go. And yes, because of the short body, you can use adapters quite effectively. I've used my Canon lenses on the Sony. It works quite well. So I love mirrorless. I think it's the future. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Of course, I'm not a pro, but I think people are starting. I remember when the R first came out, it was like, oh, come on, Canon. One card slot. Come on. But I think that was a conscious decision not to kill their mirror market. But I think they're starting to realize that a lot of people want mirrorless. I haven't played with it, but I'm starting to hear good things. It does use the EF lenses, so that's I have so much Canon glass. It hurt a lot to move to Sony, but I felt like I kind
of... Yeah, I was trying to minimize the pain of trying to shift everything over.
And you can sell glass.
The 1DX series.
Oh, you're a high-end. You're a real high-end guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be 1D level for a while.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of wondering. And I just want to minimize the body size because I'm trying to do some interesting things in the water with it.
Those 1DXs are giant.
Yeah, so that's what I'm swimming with right now. But I need to keep the frame rate, and I want a better video capability, but with a little bit small, full frame and a little bit smaller size body. So,
well, that's where mirrorless starts to shine, right? Smaller body, yeah. Really good focus, fast focus. Video is amazing. It is compatible with your EF lenses. As the R gets better, and it seems to be, I'd probably stick with Canon since you already have all that investment.
Yeah.
And glass. But maybe not get a dive housing until you decide which body you're going to go with.
Exactly. I can't. They're made specifically for you.
I know. So. I know. Have to be, of course. Yeah. No, yeah. I know. I'm not looking back. In fact, I pulled out the 5D just to say, you know, because there's some stuff in it that I love. I don't have GPS in the Sonys. There's some really, and I love the dual cards, and I like compact flash a lot. I feel like it's probably more reliable than the SD cards everybody's moving to, but it was so heavy, and I don't think I really don't think side by side the shots are as good anymore.
I still like the feel of it. I don't know.
Well, you're used to it. So. Yeah. You're used to it.
Yeah. And I like it. Yeah.
That actually shouldn't be diminished. Your comfort with your tool and your knowledge of your tool and your facility with it, the speed with which you can work with it, is really important. Another reason not to go to a different manufacturer, because at least with the R, you're going to have it'd be some familiarity with the menu structure and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a Canon. It looks like a small, like a mini Canon. and, you know, they seem to be getting more and more they're worried less and less about cannibalizing. I think they figure the 1DX guys are going to keep buying 1DXs. They're not going to change.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to leave.
Yep. I agree. I understand. Yeah. The R5 is the one we're going to want to look at. That's the one I've been concerned about
looking at that, just kind of finding out if that.
But I don't think they're aiming that even at the 1DX guys.
Sports market.
They're aiming that at the 5D guys.
Yeah.
Everybody, Ant Pruitt, our photography guy here, is very excited about the R5. He cannot wait. Yeah. Is there an R6? Somebody's saying R6 too is coming.
Really?
Yeah. Look at the R5 or the R6. Maybe he's just projecting. Yeah. The R5 should be soon.
Yeah. I think they announced it for when they were supposed to be doing the Olympics or something like
that. Right. Right. Yeah. We had no Olympics this year either.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, well, it's great to talk to you. I'm not much help, but I love talking photography, so I'm glad you called.
Awesome.
Talk again soon. Thanks, JP. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. Yes, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality. About half an hour off, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. We've got a new assignment. And Chris will have more to talk about digital photography. That's in about half an hour on the Tech Guy Show. Meanwhile, let's continue on with your calls. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Ed is in Huntington Beach, California. Hello, Ed.
Yes. Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
Fantastic. Everything's good here.
Nice.
So I hope you're relaxing here on Father's Day.
I am. My wife said, what do you want for dinner? Your special Father's Day dinner. I said, well, you know, a takeout burrito sounds pretty good. That's what's happened, isn't it? You know, a takeout burrito. Wow. That's luxury living.
make it simple, huh?
Yeah. And she said, okay. She's going to get me the macho burrito, carnitas. I'm excited. haven't been to our favorite Mexican restaurant in a long time.
I'm in the same boat you are.
Yep.
So I have a question about security. And about a week ago, my identity monitor sent me a message that I'm like 100 million other Americans that have had their
email.
Yeah,
your data's on the dark web. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ignore.
So
hit the ignore button, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Like you said it, like 100 million other Americans, try everybody.
Really?
And the problem with these dark web warnings, and I see these too, I have a LifeLock subscription, is they're not, what are you going to do? What's your plan? How do you fix that? You can't.
That's why I'm calling you.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with it because, I mean, here's the issue. Here's what's going on. There are a lot of data breaches constantly now. In fact, so many data breaches, we don't even report on them anymore. It used to be a big deal when Yahoo leaked 1 billion accounts. Big deal. When Marriott, they bought the Starwood Group and the Starwood reservation system was breached and 500 million accounts leaked. Big deal. Nowadays, it's every day. We don't talk about it anymore. Most of the time, these data breaches, at worst, the worst would happen is perhaps your email and password would get out. That's if the company did a terrible job protecting your data. Some do. Then you would want to change your password. If the credit card number got out, that's more concerning. Obviously, then you're going to call the credit card company and get a new credit card. Actually, that's what happened with the famous Equifax leak. And it's one of the reasons Equifax paid a massive judgment to the credit card companies, billions of dollars, because the credit card companies had to issue brand new credit cards to everybody. And that was a big, you know, expense for them. So Equifax was expected to pay that back. They haven't paid consumers a penny yet. So we all see these dark web warnings. And honestly, I think it would probably be good for companies to be more intelligent about. But, you know, if you're paying for a service and they don't say anything, they're worried you might cancel. So they're going to say something about everything. But there isn't much you can do. And in most cases, these dark web leaks are merely your email address. And so nothing to worry about. What was the information they gave you?
They said that, am I allowed to mention the company?
Please.
Compromised?
Yeah.
The name of the company was Evite.
Yep.
Have you heard of Evite?
I know the compromise. It happened a couple of weeks ago. That's right.
So Evite, evidently, I don't think they got my password, but they got now my email is on the dark web.
Oh, big deal. Your email's been on the dark web for years, I guarantee you. So that's a good Evite's a perfect example. One of the reasons I didn't report on this is people didn't, in most cases, give them their credit card numbers. At worst, Evite might have leaked your Evite login. And if you're worried about that, go change your password. It's back, you know. And now this is where it's really problematic. If you, like most people, have a weak password and more importantly, you reuse passwords, that's problematic. Because if you used the general purpose password you use everywhere for Evite, then that may have leaked elsewhere. So once, and this is what bad guys do when they buy these databases, they buy them and then they say, oh, good. Well, I got Ed's password now, so I'm going to try it on every site. And if you reused it, now you got a problem. So this is one of the number one reasons you should never reuse passwords. If you're really worried, here's what I would do. There's a site called Have I Been Pwned? Have I Been PWNED? It's haveibeenpwned.com. And it's a really good site. You can put your email in there and it will tell you if your email has been used in a data breach, a compromise. And you'll see Evites right away. When I enter my email, I see many, many, many. But that in of itself is, again, all that means is the bad guys have your email address. I just did it on Have I Been Pwned? Oh, no, pwned on 35 breach sites and found in 2 pastes. Yeah, but that's not necessarily a problem. They're not going to use that to get a credit card. They need more of that, more than that. You know, sometimes more concerning if your driver's license gets leaked or your address or your birth date, because in aggregate, some of that information could be used to impersonate you. So you would worry about that maybe. Much worse if your social got leaked. That would be problematic. because you can't apply for a credit card without giving up your social security number. That means if the bad guys don't have that, they're not going to get a password in your name. It won't be you, in other words. It'll be somebody else. So there are some legitimate things to worry about. But honestly, your data is on the dark web. It has been for a long time. Your email address, big deal. Do you ever get any spam? Where do you think they got the email address?
Sometimes it comes from some friends.
Yeah, those are phishing scams.
Email, and I know that it's like a spam, so I immediately put it in the junk folder.
Good man. Don't even look at the email. Just put it in the junk folder. And that's there's two reasons that happens, because they have these big mailing lists. It could be a coincidence because they never use their own reply address. They might be using an address you know. More likely, they're phishing you. And they're trying to do it, you know, for instance, I'll give you an example. My gardener's account some years ago got hacked. He had an account on Yahoo. It was part of the big Yahoo breach. And I got an email from his Yahoo Mail account saying, "Oh, Leo, I won't be coming to garden at your house this week because I'm in Florence and my passport and credit cards got stolen. I have no money. If you could just wire me $1,000, it would help me get home." And it was very credible because it knew his name and knew I was a customer, blah, blah, blah. Jeez. But it wasn't him, and I knew immediately. Although, I have to say, my ex-wife almost gave him money. And I said, "No, stop. That's not Owen."
That's a giant red flag, right?
That's not Owen, right? Because, first of all, I knew Owen wasn't in Florence. But yes, so that's the kind of thing that can happen. Worse for Owen than for you. It could be possibly somebody could send an invitation to a party using your Evite account. I don't think that's going to happen. If you're worried, change your password at that account. Find out what Evite knew. If they had a credit card number, you'll want to change that. Although,
they
don't have anything. You just responded some invitations, or maybe you have through a party and you sent out Evites. That's all. No big deal.
But I did, went ahead immediately without talking to you. I changed my password on my email, and I have a Mac Air, and it has this keychain, and so it developed a really long 18-character
perfect
password.
Beautiful.
And then I locked it up into the keychain.
Perfect.
But now, because I have the YouTube TV, and now my YouTube TV is acting up because I changed my email password. So it's kind of like...
There's a chain reaction. Yeah.
There's a chain reaction.
Yeah. You know? You're going to have to go through that. But here's the good news. We're all getting these warnings. If you do one of these credit monitoring services, and now everybody does because the bank does it, a lot of credit cards do it. If you get a warning in that regard, consider what that company might know and what it is that you'll need to change. In most cases, nothing.
Well, that's reassuring to know, Leo. Thank you. One last tag to that question is I do a lot of financial stuff on my Mac Air, and I have a VPN, which is Tunnel Bear. But,
good.
But I have heard that I should buy a Chromebook and segregate my two computers. My Mac Air would just be my general computer, and my Chromebook would just be a financial computer.
I don't do that. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
I don't do that. Okay. Just be careful. Don't, you know, try not to get bit.
Okay.
It would be a pretty bad compromise if that would become a problem. That would mean somebody's not only gotten your computer, but they're watching everything you do, including all your keystrokes, things like that. That's very unlikely. Be careful. But I don't do that.
Thank you. Thank you. You just saved me a bunch of money.
Good, Ed. Just relax.
Okay. I will. Thanks, Leo, for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ed. I'm not saying you shouldn't pay attention to these warnings, but you should, when you get a warning like that, think about, well, what do they know? What does Evite have of mine? And the other thing to remember is most of the time, not all the time, unfortunately, companies are careful. I think now because breaches are so common, they're more careful with your stuff. And the thing that a company like Evite can do, even with your password, but also with any other information they have, is encrypt it. And there are ways to do this, well-known ways that they keep it on their servers, but they keep it so that even if somebody got into their servers and downloaded everything, all they would get is an encrypted file, something they couldn't read. And everybody should be doing that. Certainly the good companies, Facebook, Apple, Google, Microsoft, they all do that. They do something called hashing and salting. You can remember because it sounds like breakfast. Hashing and salting. If your passwords are hashed and salted, the hacker has nothing. He has your email address. That's all. Usually the email address is stored in the clear. That's fine because email addresses leak out all the time anyway. Anytime you use it, you're leaking it out. You know who else is leaking your email addresses all the time? Your friends. You may be leaking their email address. When you sign up for Facebook, does it say, hey, can we download your contact list so we can let you know who else is on here so you can be friends with them? You ever do that? When you sign up for a Messenger product, does it say, hey, give us your contact list so that we can tell you who else is on the Messenger and notify you in future when your friends join? You ever do that? You're giving up their email, phone number, address because you're giving them your contact list. Everybody does it. I don't. I always say no. But I know everybody, every single person who has my name, address, and phone number in their contact list has given it to many, many companies. And we do it all the time. We don't even think about it. All the time. We don't even think about it. Your friends are turning you in. They're giving you up. And it happens. What are you going to do? 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number if you want to talk high tech. I should talk more about this because I know about this stuff. People who work in the business know about this stuff, but I don't think regular people even know. When you sign up for something and it says, hey, can we look at your contacts to see if any of your friends are on here? People just go, yeah, of course. That's nice. That's convenient. Thank you. I appreciate you doing that. They forget. You just gave every bit of your friend's information to this third party. You know who really does that a lot? Evite. Right? When you send an Evite to your mailing list, what do you think Evite does with those email addresses it gets? Oh, no, it closes its eyes before it sends out those invitations. It doesn't look. I'm not looking. No. It adds them to its list. That's why the breach is a big deal. It knows everybody's email. Big deal. Who cares? I'll give my email. I'll give it to you. I don't care. Our show, just you always have to think about what do they get? What do they get? And if they got something like passwords, credit card numbers, driver's license, social security number, then you've got to worry. And that's why you want to be really careful about who you give your information to. Including probably Grandma Sally and Uncle Joe and your high school sweetheart. They probably shouldn't have it either, but yeah, we got to live, right? Perfect Father's Day song. Thank you, Lady Laura, our musical director. Carry on, my wayward son. I'm sure my dad thinks that's perfect. Dad, I'm going into radio. What? No, I'm going to be a DJ, Dad. After what we spent on college for you? Yeah, Dad, I'm dropping out to become a DJ. Okay.
He was proud.
Carry on, my wayward son. Okay. Craig in Venice Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day.
Hey, Leo, I've been a teacher for 20 years.
Nice. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
That's a huge service. One of the most important things you can do. That's great.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
What do you teach?
Well, I taught theater and guitar for a while, but now since the COVID, I've been back at English. So
awesome. Theater and guitar. Now, that's what I would teach. That's awesome. Of course, I can't act and can't play any instruments, but if I could, that's what I would teach. Yeah. So what can I do to help you?
Well, looking towards the future, winding down on this part of the career, still got some life left in the battery here. And, my main thing is I want to have a skill, and I want to have a skill that I can use for myself and other people that's important and awesome. Has a lot of growth. And so thought about taking a CIS course to just see if I like computers.
Good.
But are we still in the infancy of technology? Oh. What are the areas to go in?
Oh.
What's the lay of the land?
Oh, you got big questions. So what I would start, the good news is you couldn't pick a better time. Besides the fact that we're home, we got a lot of time on our hands, but you couldn't pick a better time to learn computer science or learn about this stuff because it's all online now. It's all online now. There are plenty of paid courses, but I would start with some of the free courses. Some of the best courses from MIT, from Yale, are free online. The place I would start is a company online site called edx.org. edx.org. That was started by Stanford and MIT to put their courses online. And on there is Harvard's Beginning Introduction to Computer Science. They call it CS50. The entire course is on there, including courseware, coursework, quizzes. If you can get through CS50, and it's fast, it's for Harvard freshmen, but if you can get through that, you'll have a much better idea of what you like and what you want to do. I think for, you know, it's hard. It moves very fast. The advantage is you're watching on video. You could pause it. You could think about it. Maybe find some other people who are doing it, too. That's one of the great things about EDX. They have forums associated with each class. So if you there's a concept and you go, I don't know what, there are plenty of people, usually maybe many thousands of people in there that you could say, I don't get it. Teaching assistants are in there as well. So, and it's free. You pay for it if you want a certificate. The certificate's meaningless. You might eventually want the certificate because you could then use it to get a job, perhaps. But that's where I would start. That'll give you a broad overview of computer science.
Okay.
And then when you get a sense of what you're interested in, there's lots more places to go. But the beauty of this is you can sit down right now, this minute, as soon as you get off the phone, and watch that on your TV and, you know, or your web, on your laptop on the website. And that's really great. It's Harvard's CS50. Don't be intimidated because it does move quick. It's for really bright, you know, college freshmen, but it doesn't assume any knowledge.
Okay.
And then after that, if you say, well, I'd like to get into IT, for instance, there are plenty of places. Our sponsor, itpro.tv, has very affordable memberships that you can watch all of. They have all the certificates, so you could get a certificate, get a job. And they also do career guidance, so you could say, well, I like this, I like that, I want to do security, I like machines, I want to learn that. You know what? Chris Marquardt used to work at HP. It's been a while, hasn't it, Chris? But
yes, it has.
What would you say if somebody, you know, smart guy, looking to do a new career? It was fun working in computers, wasn't it? Chris has become a photographer now, but
oh yeah, it was fun and it taught me a lot about the business world and about project management and all these skills I can now use for what I do now.
Did you study computer science in school? Is that how you got into it?
I know you didn't.
How about you, Chris?
I did, but I flunked out before I got my.
So there you go. There you go, Craig. Chris flunked out, but he still got a job at HP doing it. That may be changing, but almost everybody I know in technology didn't make it through college, dropped out, including Bill Gates, Steve Jobs. This was the norm.
College.
Yeah. So
I've been getting really into the cryptocurrencies, and I want to like maybe try to do something for blockchain around teaching.
That's fascinating. Like that's really fascinating. So CS50 will be much
angle you need for that.
Well, that's the thing. I would do the CS50 thing first, just to give you a base, and then you could say, "All right, I want to learn about blockchain," and there will be just as many resources there. There are online. There's like Udemy where you pay. The problem with Udemy is some of the courses are really good, some of them are not, and the amount you pay is does not prove anything. So I would stick with EDX, Coursera, Coursera. They're well established, and they offer courses from the big universities. So
thank you so much, Leo.
Hey, I think it's a great idea, Craig. And you know what? Because you're a musician, you already have the aptitude.
Yeah, it is music of a language and a math.
They're very, almost every good computer scientist I know is a musician.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So you already, it's in your mind. I don't know what it is, but it's in your mind, and so you may find this easier than many. Have fun, Craig.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, you picked up one of my questions on your little video post. I felt so honored.
Which was the question?
It was about the YubiKey.
Oh, I'm so glad you... That's great. Thank you for the question.
Thanks so much.
It was a good one. Take care. Bye. It's time for Chris Marquardt's Photo Guy. Is that what it says on your card, Chris Marquardt? Photo Guy.
not really. I think you made that up.
Actually, but I should call you now Photo Sensei, because he's teaching photography online at sensei.photo. That's his new photo education site. But of course, he's got great books. He's a wonderful photographer. And someday when travel is okay again, he will be taking people on the road on his world famous travel photo workshops. And I hope that day comes soon, because I'd like to go on those. They really look
fun. And that's the plan, yes.
Yes. Someday. I'll have to retire, but I'll be there. Chris talks about digital photography every week with us and becoming better photographers. What's your subject for the day today?
I have something that is somewhat related to photography, and I want to go back to Starlink for this episode.
Oh.
It's a thing that I'm very torn about, and many photographers are very torn about, because on the one hand they promise this fast internet for almost everyone anywhere because it comes from satellites, but on the other hand there are astrophotographers and astronomers who are not that happy about this, because what these satellites do, and you likely have seen articles about it, they add new light dots to the sky, and those dots turn out to be a bit of a problem. So
now I have to say, though, this is Elon Musk's SpaceX, and they're going to plan to launch, guess, stand back, as many as 12,000 of them. There's already hundreds in the air. But one thing, they did talk to astrophotographers, and they understood their concerns. They are now putting a sunshade on these satellites, something no other satellites do. So
that's what I wanted to explain and wanted to go into what's actually happening there and what the reason for this
good.
Is. So they initially had one of the satellites with the white antenna arrays being painted black, just to see if that would... well, first of all, reduce enough light to make them more invisible. And and it turned out this didn't really work, because they were heating up too much, and they were...
Black's a bad color in space.
Well, and they were reflecting infrared now, and infrared is
yikes.
Not good for watching the sky. So that didn't really work, and... So I think we have to first look into what is the problem, because when you want to take a photo of the sky and of the night sky, or if you have a telescope and you want to take an exposure of whatever faraway galaxy, then you will do a long exposure. And that long exposure means things that move during that exposure will be visible on your picture. So instead of having just a dot from a satellite, you have a stripe, or in case of SpaceX and the Starlink system, you have multiple stripes, especially when these satellites have just been launched and when they're still on their way to their final orbit, which takes weeks or
maybe
months.
We should say this is nothing new, but with the prospect of maybe 100 times more satellites in the sky, it might be a little problematic.
So I'm kind of happy that SpaceX is listening and
they are trying. Yeah.
So they tried what they call dark sat, which is the painted sat, and that didn't really work. And then, as you said, they are now have a test satellite up, which has a visor that shades these parts from the sun, so there won't be sun falling on those areas of the satellite that are reflective.
That doesn't mean the satellite won't be there and it won't block light, but at least it won't reflect light.
And it will also not make them completely invisible to the astronomers. What they are looking for and what they're trying is they want to make them invisible for the naked eye. And now they have worked with an observatory to really understand the problem. And the problem is not necessarily that there will be additional things on the picture, because what these sky watchers do is they do what's called stacking. They take multiple photos and take out what is different between them. So that's a method that is being in use already. The big problem is that these telescopes use what's called CCD sensors. Now, if you're in your camera, in your DSLR, in your mirrorless camera, you probably have a CMOS sensor. And the CMOS sensor, if you overexpose a pixel, then that's the pixel that's overexposed. The rest is not affected. What happens with the CCDs is that if you overexpose a group of pixels from a really bright satellite, like if those are really saturated pixels, if they are what we call blown out, then that has the chance to affect more than just these pixels. It might affect an entire row of pixels. That's called blooming. So that's
pixel not good.
Might knock out an entire row of other pixels. And that is the big problem. So what they are working now on is several things. The first is the visors to reduce the reflectivity. And the second is that they... as soon as those satellites are in their final orbit, like I think 550 kilometers up there, they have their solar arrays, which are also reflective, what they call in a shark fin configuration. So it stands on top of the satellite. So if you look at it, it's pointing away from the Earth. And what they can do is, and what they are planning to do is, they are planning to slightly rotate the satellites in a way that the solar array isn't visible from the Earth, so the reflections are pretty much shielded that way too. So there are multiple things they are doing to get a hold of this. We don't really have results just yet. I think as of today, there's one of these visor satellites up there, but they seem to be so convinced that this is going to work that they are planning to have all the satellites from now on equipped with these visors.
Yeah, because you got to
reduce the.
And I know that this is why you're conflicted. You also you have to balance the need of astrophotographers with the needs of the world to have internet access.
Oh, I would love to have fast internet out there in somewhere in the wilderness.
Yeah, next time you're in Kyrgyzstan, you just fire up your satellite dish.
Well, honestly, the internet wasn't too bad out there.
Oh, okay. Probably better there than it is here. But okay.
Certainly, other places where
Svalbard, that's the case. Somewhere.
somewhere out on ships. I mean, that's
it's
where
terrible. Yeah.
Internet is the most difficult to get, or if you get it, it's super expensive. So that's one heart beating in my chest, and the other is I'm a photographer, and I don't want to look up and see things that will kind of disturb my night photos, my sky photos. Yeah,
we'd like to see the sky as we've seen it for millennia.
Yes.
So it's a difficult.
That's kind of the idea.
It's a difficult challenge. But the good news is, unlike a lot of other satellite companies, SpaceX at least is talking to astronomers and astrophotographers and trying to work out a solution.
And they better do, because otherwise this would be a PR disaster. I mean, there's already been quite some public backlash. So I think they're doing the right thing. I hope that... I mean, they worked with the American Astronomer Society. They worked with what's it called? A big observatory. So
good. They're paying
attention from them. They understand the issues and they're paying attention. And
I could see Elon buying everybody a better camera for their... through the telescope, so they can all use CMOS. You know,
those sensors in the telescopes aren't cheap, I would think.
No.
I mean, they are very similar to what you have in your camera, but they aren't cheap.
Hey, quickly, before we go, what is our assignment this month?
The assignment is outside.
Outside?
We still have 3 weeks to go.
So take a picture illustrating the word or concept outside, upload it to Flickr, tag it TG Outside, and submit it to the Tech Guy group, and in 3 weeks, Chris is going to pick three for review. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. Don't forget his one-to-one photo teaching. I think this is such a great idea while we're all stuck at home. Sensei.photo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm glad you brought that up, because I had been reading about this and I was curious as if this would be enough of a solution
Actually, if you want to put a link into the show notes, let me check. I made a shortcut. I just forgot to give it to you. It's at tftgf.com/su, as in starting update.
Okay.
They have nice visuals there and a very good explanation of what they're doing.
Perfect.
It's a masterpiece in communication what they've done there.
Is that from Starlink?
That's from Starlink, from SpaceX. Yeah.
Well, that's good. tfttu.com/su.
tfttf.com/su.
Why did I put U? tfttf.com/su. Or you could type out tips from the top floor.
That won't be a link shortener for you, though.
Yeah. Have you ever used a 360-degree turntable for photography? Somebody called us earlier, and there's a product that he wanted to get from Iconisys it's not too expensive, a couple $100. You put something on it, and then it controls your camera via USB, and it rotates it as you take pictures to get a 3D rendering of it. Are you familiar with anything like that?
I know there are products out there, and I haven't heard anything bad about this. So.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know anything about it either, so. I said I'd ask you.
These systems generally work quite well for stuff that's not too big. And
yeah. I showed you with my mask. I just used the amazing thing is the phone has enough depth sensing now in this camera that it can do an amazing 3D render in seconds.
What is that product called?
It's you should try it. BELLUS 3D. Bellus 3D. Yeah.
I'll have a look.
Yeah, it's fun. Put it on your iPhone. It's fun to play with. You can't, you know, previously it was just like a toy. Oh, that's cool. So what do I do now? And
Does it export to any format?
Yes, it exports to standard 3D printing formats, yeah. So you can 3D print the fitter yourself, but I don't have a 3D printer, so for $20
I'm getting it. Oh, yeah, there's enough services to do that, sure.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Stay well.
Right.
Have a good one.
See you next week.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Tom in Dayton, Ohio's next. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, not bad. Got a question for you. I got a Lenovo 910 Yoga, and every time I boot it up, I get a message that says default boot device missing or boot failed.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
I really like that 910, by the way. I think that's a very nice system and not expensive. And it's a really nice tool.
Yeah, good luck with it.
Yeah. That sounds like your hard drive failed.
Okay. Well, I can turn it on and off a couple of times, and then
it starts up? All right. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Is it I'm going to guess it's a spinning drive, an HDD, not an SSD in there.
Right.
Oh, it is. What a good guess, Leo.
It's spinning.
Yeah. Because that is typical of a spinning drive, where it won't start up, but then it just starts up. If you had a solid state drive in there and it was doing that, then I would have more concern. But not at all unusual for a spinning drive to take a little nudge to get going. It could be that it's heating up, it's warming up. It could be stiction, where the head is sticking a little bit to the platter and then it kind of breaks loose. It could be a power supply that's a problem. If you'd said SSD, I would have said, oh, you might have a power supply issue. But I think it's, you know, what's happening, in most cases, what's happening here is it's heating up. And you get to a certain temperature, and it goes, oh, yeah, there's the hard drive. And does it operate reliably after that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it works great. But,
so it's just that you got to double clutch it.
Screen.
Yeah.
And it freaks me out that I'm going to lose everything. So.
Well, you certainly should make a backup. It could be a warning. Right. But it doesn't – honestly, I'm going to think in most cases that's not the hard drive, but it's the surrounding circuitry that's warming up. It could be the hard drive that's warming up. Easy fix.
Okay.
Probably easy fix by replacing that hard drive.
Okay.
And not expensive to do either, and probably something you could do yourself. I always send people to ifixit.com. It's a really great informational site, and see if they have anything on the Yoga 910 on upgrading the hard drive. Also, some hard drive companies like Corsair might have a compatibility checker, because you got to get the right kind and a video on how to do it. Chances are, I'm going to guess on this one, it's just some screws in the bottom you remove. There's the hard drive. There may be a screw holding the hard drive in place. You remove that, and you can replace it. And you can replace that spinning drive with an SSD, which will give you much better performance and more reliability. And it may well fix this problem. Now, if the problem remains, then it's other circuitry around it. But I think that's the easiest fix to do, and I bet you it'll work.
Okay. Now, it does say insert recovery media. Now,
yeah, because it can't. So what's happening is it's turning on and saying, you don't have a hard drive. I don't know what to do. You want, and it's thinking maybe what we got to do is reinstall the operating system on here. That's not the case because you turn it off, turn it on, turn it off, turn it on. Oh, there it is, and it works. Right. So it isn't the problem isn't the hard drive itself, the contents of the hard drive. You definitely don't want to wipe it and reinstall. That's not going to fix it. It's either the hard drive is not working when it's cold, the power supply is insufficient, or it's possible that the circuitry around it needs to heat up. That's not unusual. If you felt like, I mean, is it under warranty still? How recently did you get it?
Oh, no, this is years old.
Yeah. So there's no sense in calling Lenovo. Yeah, it works. Those are great laptops. I really liked them. Lenovo, if I'm looking at their fix-it solution, their assumption is the hard drive's gone. But in this case,
you said that site was called iFixit?
iFixit.com. Or you could even, honestly, it would work to say, to Google, replace hard drive Yoga 940, and you would find it. You would either find an iFixit video. They're the most trustworthy. They even sell the parts. Or you'd find it on YouTube. There's guarantees somebody's made a video on how to do it. Look at the video. See if you feel comfortable with the operation. It's not exactly brain surgery.
Good deal.
All right. Thanks for calling. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad we got you first because the temptation is, oh, I'm going to follow instructions and reinstall Windows, and that would be a complete waste of time. That's not what's failing, in my opinion. Sometimes, I mean, with a spinning drive, it could be, in fact, that the boot sector is a little misaligned, and as the drive heats up, it just expands a little bit, and it works now. It could easily be stuff like that. That's why I'm not a fan now of these hard drives, spinning hard drives, because they're, if you think about it, incredibly complex mechanical devices with bearings and heads and platters that spin thousands of times a minute. And there's lots of things that can go wrong with moving parts. It's a crazy moving part. It's a Rube Goldberg machine in there. So replace it with SSD. It's just like it's flash memory. It's just like your flash memory in your camera. It's reliable. It's robust. And it has the advantage of being incredibly fast, much faster than an SSD, or rather an HD. So I guess I'm going to have to kind of start saying HD versus SSD. Or HDD versus SDD. SSD. That's not going to help, is it? Solid state disk drive, SSD, versus hard disk drive. Those are the initials you'll see. That's the technical distinction. I sometimes say spinning drive. You understand that better, right? That makes more sense. If I say it's a spinning drive, you know what I mean when I say that. Ed in Hughesville, Pennsylvania. Hello, Ed.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I'd like to get your opinion on the wisdom of getting an older desktop computer refurbished versus buying a new one. What I've got, it's an Asus desktop. It's from about 2013. It's an i7-3770, 16 gigs of RAM. It's totally adequate for all my needs.
Yeah, that's a very nice system. What's wrong with it? Why do you need to refurbish it?
Well, I think it's at the age where maybe you should replace a thermal paste on the processor. Probably it'd be a good idea on the hard drive.
Do you know how to do this yourself?
No, but I have someone that can do that.
I don't think it's a bad idea. Remember, it's not a bicycle. It's not a car. It's not getting dirty. It's not. There's no moving parts. So it's, you don't need to maintain it as much as you would a vehicle. But you're right. The thermal paste can dry out. That means it'll start to overheat. It's always a good idea as a machine ages to get a new fast hard drive. SSDs, as I was saying, much faster, much more reliable. It's a good time to do that. You probably don't need to do much else. Clean it out, dust it out, make sure the fans work, the screens are clear and, you know, not clogged up with dog hair. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't spend a lot of money to do that, but you're absolutely right. Even though that's a 7-year-old computer, it's more than fast enough. So a little tune-up, and I think you could stick with it for a long time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Why, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, actually whatever is on your mind, really. That's all we talk about. Whatever's on your mind, you can call in, raise any topic as long as it has a chip in it or something to do with technology. That phone number is 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's a toll-free number in the U.S. and Canada, outside that area. And I know we have viewers and listeners all over the world. Thanks to the internet, you can just use Skype out or something and call it. Shouldn't cost you anything. 888-ASK-LEO. Website, techguylabs.com. That's where everything we say on the show, everything we talk about, all the answers, all the questions, everything's on the website. Thanks to our scribe, James DeRuvo, who's writing it all down. That address, it's free, no sign up, techguylabs.com. John's on the line from Moore Park, California. Hello, John.
Hi, Leo. I'm calling, listening to you on KFI.
The great KFI, our mothership. Well, I'm so glad. Welcome.
I am such a pleasure to finally speak with you. I have I loved your commercial. I have OneDrive, and I'm paying like $60 a year for that. I have Office 365.
Yep.
Do I need iDrive, or can I get by? I'm tired of forking over money.
Here's my problem with using something like Microsoft's OneDrive or Apple's iCloud or Dropbox. All of these synchronization solutions do one thing I don't like, and that is you're basically syncing the OneDrive folder or the iCloud folder or the Dropbox folder. You can't, and I wish you could, just say, I want you to sync this, 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 and this to OneDrive. If you could, then it would be kind of like a backup. I mean, it's not exactly the same. For one thing, syncing is different than backing up. The idea with a backup is you don't delete anything from the original. You only copy anything new onto the backup. And that's important because for instance, with a company like iDrive, and again, they're a sponsor, but there are other companies that do the same thing. They have previous versions of your file. So, and actually Dropbox has started doing this. So some other sync companies do this, but the idea is you could go back and say, well, okay, that copy that I just did, let's say you're writing a book and you changed Charlotte's name by accident to suitcase. You went through global search in place, and now it says, you know, suitcase fell in love, but was never able to. And then you just, you've ruined it, right? And then, oh, you make an additional mistake, you save it. Gosh darn it. Now I've ruined my novel. It's all about somebody named Suitcase. What am I going to do? Oh, because of versioning, the previous version of that novel with Charlotte is on iDrive. And as I said, Dropbox will do that. I don't know if OneDrive will do that, but that's nice. That's versioning. iDrive also does something that I really like. And some file systems do this, but unfortunately not any file system you're using. But some high-end file systems like ZFS do this. Apple's new file system, APFS, can do it, but they haven't turned it on yet. It's called snapshotting, where it will actually save a snapshot of the state of your drive periodically. And iDrive does do this. And the snapshots feature, we talk about this in the ad, is why if you get bit by ransomware, say you get, you know, ransomware, you open an email, you think it's from your mother with her super duper cake recipe, the chocolate cake no one can turn away from. Oh, can't wait. I've been dying to get this out of her. You open it up. It's not a chocolate cake recipe. It's malware from somebody pretending to be your mother. How dare you? And it immediately runs through your computer, encrypting every file, and then pops up a nice little message saying, ha ha, it's not your mother, it's me, Mr. Bad Guy. If you ever want to see your data again, send me $1,000. This happens all the time. if you have a hot, what they call a hot backup, and it's always backing up, and by the way, Dropbox, OneDrive, all of these will work that way, they will immediately synchronize the new versions of the files, oops, the ones you can't see because they're encrypted. Oh, boy. Now everything on your backup is encrypted on OneDrive or iDrive or iCloud. That's not good. That's why snapshots are really handy, because you can then say, no, I don't want the most recent copy of my files. I want to go back a day. The one, you know, yesterday before I met my mother's chocolate cake recipe, perfect. Everything's still there, unencrypted, and you're good to go. So snapshotting is a very nice feature. We're going to see more of that, I think, in file systems. I'm hoping Apple will eventually turn this on. It's a feature that is in Apple's file system, their new one they just released a couple of years ago, APFS, but they haven't enabled it yet. So there are some differences. When you're using a tool that's designed to do backup, it has different features than a tool that's designed to do file syncing, and that's the big difference. Now, you could absolutely, and many people do, you could absolutely use OneDrive or Dropbox or iCloud for backup. You'd put everything in the OneDrive folder, for instance. I'll have to check. I believe that Microsoft may be starting to let you back up arbitrary folders. That would be nice. If you said, I want to sync my documents folder, not just the OneDrive folder. Once they start doing that, that'll make it more useful. There's all sorts of ways to do this. I just started playing with a new tool. I'm going to probably talk about this in time, because I find it really intriguing. It's an open source tool called SyncThing, and it's available for Mac, Windows, Linux. It's free because it's open source. And what it does is very different than iDrive or OneDrive or One iCloud. It allows you to synchronize any folder between computers. Yeah, this didn't make sense in the days when we had one computer. That's my computer, huh? You know, it's precious. You really needed to back that up. But nowadays, many of us have a desktop, a laptop. Maybe you have a computer at work. You might have, you know, multiple systems. SyncThing, when you put it, and I do, when you put it on one system, you can set it up so that it automatically, in the background, synchronizes folders from multiple systems. Not to the cloud, not to anywhere, except each other. And I like that, because one of the problems with any system is if you're putting your data in the cloud, you have to think about how secure that place is, and do you want to put anything that really needs to be private up there? And my naked baby pictures, I'm not sure I want to have up in the cloud, because you never know. And so you always have to make that calculation. With SyncThing, you don't. It just synchronizes. It never goes to the cloud, never goes anywhere but your own systems. It's a really interesting product. Okay, now Irvine Rob is saying, OneDrive, if you find the folder you want to add, click the circle in the folders tile to select it. Click add to my OneDrive. So you can, and does that doesn't move it to the OneDrive, is that right? Okay, so iDrive has added that. They've also, apparently, OneDrive has previous versions. So some of those features they're starting to add to OneDrive. I don't even think Microsoft positions OneDrive, though, as a backup solution. There are other things you might want from a backup solution, but it sounds like they're adding versioning. Sounds like you can backup an arbitrary folder, but all of that requires a little extra work. A backup solution is going to be more tuned to the things that you want to do with it. Yeah, I don't blame you. You're already spending money, John, for Microsoft's OneDrive. If you're happy with the ways it will do the backups you want, I think go for it. You already have it. A lot of people have OneDrive. I have a large OneDrive because I have a Microsoft 365 subscription. So, yeah, use it. What I often do is I use them all. And I don't mind having copies of, for instance, my documents folder, and nothing secret or private is in there. But all the things I'm working on are in there. I don't mind having that on multiple computers backed up in multiple places in multiple clouds. The more the merrier, less likely to lose it. So I'm very interested in this SyncThing. I just started using it yesterday, so I think it's premature for me to say anything about it. But I like it that it's open source and free. And I like it that it doesn't put my data in the cloud. I have to investigate how secure it is. That I'm not clear about. It reminds me a lot of something called BitTorrent Sync that came out some time ago that didn't really have a security story, but it did do some of the same things. This one seems a little more polished, a little more clever. So, but I, again, it's premature for me to mention. And I only mention it because there are other options. There are lots of options out there. None better than my friends at iDrive, of course, our sponsor, which works. The nice thing about iDrive is it works without thinking about it, right? You just do it. Turn it on, does it. Boom, you're done. You don't have to think about it. If you don't mind spending some time configuring OneDrive, I think you probably can do many of the same things. Not all, but many of the same things. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm talking about Lady Laura, our musical director. Leo Laporte, taking your calls. 8888 Ask Leo. Dwight in Bismarck, North Dakota. Hello, Mike. Or Dwight.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Dwight.
Need some help there, buddy.
Uh-oh, what's the matter?
I got Win 10 version 2004 sitting in my update screen.
Oh, and you're looking at that going, oh, boy. Oh, no. It's like the like the axe hanging over your head on a thin little string. Should I cut that string? I would wait. First of all, very important to distinguish. Microsoft does two kinds of updates. Most operating systems do. Feature updates and security updates. 2004, like 1903, 1909, and 2003 before. No, I guess it's 2004. Like 1909 and 1903 before it is a feature update. There's nothing you have to have in there. And I bet you there are a lot of people who have pressed the upgrade button. And if you ask them what's different, it would be hard-pressed to tell you. It's not a massive difference.
Well, I did a web search on 2004, and there's all kinds of horror stories where Microsoft
That's the other thing.
They broke everything in it.
Well, it's not as bad. To be fair, it's not as bad as 1909 or 1903. But this is the problem. Anytime you're doing an upgrade like that, it is a little risky. I should be very clear. Remember, there's 1.5 billion Windows users, almost 1 billion Windows 10 users. So even if 1/1000th of 1% has a problem, that's still thousands of posts on the net. So I would say for the most part, it's safe. But you could be that, you know, 1/10th, 1/1000th, 1%. And, you know, there's weird little problems like the printer stops working. There is some data loss, but you have to be using something very few people use called, spanned drive, something like that. And then if you use check disk, it'll erase all your data. It's weird things like that. And yeah. For most of us, we're not going to get bit. On the other hand, you got to balance risk and reward. What's the reward of 2004? Nada. Nothing.
Well, how am I going to know that this stuff gets fixed?
Well, you just wait a few weeks. You'd never want to be the first person to install this.
No, this got pushed to me.
Yeah, well, that's the other side of it. Microsoft does not push it unless they feel like your hardware is compatible. In fact, kind of surprisingly, a lot of people who own Microsoft computers aren't getting it yet. You'd think they'd make sure it works with their Surface stuff first, but, you know, apparently there are some issues. So they do check. They have a compatibility checker. They won't push it to you unless they feel it's safe. That should be some reassurance. But again, there's so little new stuff. Unless you know, I got to have that new feature in 2004, I would say there's no hurry. Take your time. The problem is you're going to see that axe hanging over your head for a while. And at some point, you're going to want to push the button. And you could do it now. It's not 100% safe. It's like 99.99% safe. But there's no rush because there's nothing you need in it. So
that's true.
Right? So I'd wait a few weeks. And once the smoke clears and you stop seeing articles saying, oh, whatever you do, then you can go ahead and do it. I wouldn't say you need to wait more than a few weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. And here's by the way, just peripherally, very good news. This naming convention is terrible. It's the year and the month, but it's not really the month because, what is it, 2004 and it's coming out? Wait a minute. This is June. Shouldn't it be 2006? So it's sort of the month. It's like the month they're aiming for. And it has this added problem. You know, the next one's going to be 2009. But just like you did, a lot of people are going to say, Windows 10 2009? I don't want to go back. That's 10 years ago. I don't want Windows 10 2009. Can I get Windows 10 2020? So they realized finally, it took them a while, that this isn't working. It's confusing. It's really confusing to people. So Microsoft is, hallelujah, the heavens are opening. It's a new day. They've said the next one will not be called Windows 10 2009. It will be called Windows 10 20, that's the year, H2 for second half. This one would have been, and it was, in fact, while they were pre-releasing it before they actually released it, Windows 10 20H1 for the first half. It'll be 20H2 for the second half. That'll come out in the fall. That's much better. First of all, you never hit that month. It's embarrassing. It's nice to know the year and roughly what time of year. First half. Okay. Second half. That's fine. You can't say spring, summer, winter, or fall because it's a global product. And right now, while we're having, you know, a beautiful summer in the northern hemisphere, in the southern hemisphere, it's winter. So they're not going to use seasons, although they have done that. They had a fall update, which confused our Australian friends a lot. You mean spring update? Yeah, spring update. For us, fall update. 20H2, much better. Windows 10 20.h. Well, I don't know. There may not be a dot. There's also been debate whether there should be a dot. I think it should have been 20.04. That would have helped a little bit, right? Then you'd know, well, it's not 2004. But no, there's no dot. In their infinite wisdom, I think, you know, honestly, I bet you there's something in their software. It sees a dot. It goes, well, I don't know what to do with that. Is that a fraction? In fact, I bet you there was something in their software that prevented letters, too. They fixed that. So now it's 20H2. Yeah. Wait. No hurry. Why hurry? Why take a chance? Wait a couple of weeks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Happy Father's Day. And thank you to Lady Laura for all the fine Father's Day music. Ed in Valencia, California. Hello, Ed. Hello, Ed. Ed, are you there? Speak to me. Here we are. Hello, Ed.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I got a question.
Okay.
I had one of those Lenovo, kind of like a tablet that had the glowing keyboard, and I've been using it basically now just as a tablet. And when I go to iHeartRadio, that app plays things in slow motion.
So I sound like this. Everybody sounds drunk on it, right?
Yeah. Every other app works. My music app works on that, but iHeartRadio.
And you've checked the Android, Google Play Store to see if there's an updated app. Is it, it's an Android device or a Windows device?
It's an Android.
Android, okay. Yeah, I would. It sounds like the version of iHeart is old on there. And so, that's pretty funny, actually.
I watched that, reset it, and then tried it again and looked whatever version was on the Google Play Store.
It didn't fix it?
No, I thought everything else worked great.
That is very funny. You know, it's a clearly it's a problem with the program. It's not. How old is the Lenovo?
Probably. There's the one that has, like, the gears on it where you flip it on.
Oh, yeah. So is it big?
No, it's about 8.5 inches.
Okay. So this happens because digital audio is stored as bits. It's not stored as waves. And so the bit rate, the rate of the number of bits per second, there are standard bit rates. In fact, when you listen to a CD, it's the sound is 16-bit audio. That means it's recorded 16 bits per sample, per slice, and then there are 44,100 samples a second. Now, if the machine, the computer, didn't know that and said, I'm going to assume that your sample rate is 22,000 samples a second and played it back, everything would be twice as fast. If it assumed the sample rate, instead of 44,100 bits per second, was, say, 92,000 bits per second, everything would sound a little bit slow. So there's a sample rate mismatch. Now, that shouldn't happen on consumer devices. It does. I'm familiar with it because on some of our broadcast equipment, that does happen. We have a broadcast, digital broadcast converter that we use to connect the computer to so that we can record the screen and the audio. And for reasons I'm not sure I fully understand, it assumes that the audio it's getting is at broadcast standard speed, which is 48,000 samples a second, instead of what it's getting, which is 44.1. So everything sounds a little slow. It's not a good look. Everybody sounds a little drunk. So I guess that's what's happening. Why is it happening with the iHeart player and nothing else? Well, it sounds like a bug in the iHeart player. It's a mismatch, is I guess what I'm saying, between the program, the iHeart player, which is bringing audio in, probably at it's probably MP3 audio at, say, 128,000 bits per second. And for some reason, Lenovo has decided to play it back at a different speed, a little bit slower. I don't know how you would fix that except getting, you know, make sure your Lenovo, your Android's up to date. It won't be able to, since it's fairly old, it probably won't be able to get Android 10 on it. But, just, you know, go to the system settings, update it, and make sure you've got the latest. This is so weird. The latest version of iHeart. There may be a setting in iHeart that lets you change the bitrate. It probably won't say bitrate because that's confusing to people. It might say high quality, low quality. Try changing the quality setting in the iHeart app. Maybe that'll help it. Maybe it'll, because what's really happening is it's changing the bitrate. So maybe by changing the quality setting, you can get it so that we don't all sound a little bit drunk. A little bit slowed down. That's the funniest thing I ever heard. I don't know anything about it. It's not that the tablet is slow. It's literally a mismatch between the you know what? The best way to, somebody in the chat room, user one, thank you. It's as if you've got a turntable. You might remember this. And you put a 45 on it, but you're playing it back at 33 and a third RPM. That's what it's like, right? It's just you gotta play it back at the same speed it was recorded at. That's weird. You got me. I've never heard of that. The iHeart engineers are listening, right, guys? If you have a solution, call me, 8888 Ask Leo. If it's a problem in the software, fix it. Because I want you to listen to our show, right? Ed wants to listen to our show. That's a weird one, Ed. I don't know. Tom in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Oh, hi, Leo.
I'm going to talk a little bit faster so that it doesn't sound so weird, Ed.
Oh, okay.
What can I do for you, Tom?
You got me so nervous, I was so surprised to get on today.
Surprise! Happy Father's Day.
Well, thank you, sir. Same to you. Long-time
thank you.
Listener. Love all your suggestions. And,
thank you, Tom. Thank you.
See what you think.
Thanks.
Problem is, a secondary drive says access denied after reinstalling Windows. And anything I do, I can't find a way to fix it.
I'm hoping it's just a simple take control of the drive. Sometimes did you use BitLocker encryption on Windows the last time?
No, I haven't done anything. It was a simple, the quick backstory, installed Windows 10 reinstalled it about 6-8 months ago because the computer was acting up. I actually don't remember why. Worked fine until about a month ago. Windows started deteriorating. It took forever to load. Finally got to the point I got a white screen flashing and just wouldn't load. So I said, okay, I'll take a risk. reinstall it again. This time I did too much reading, I guess, because the first time I did not disconnect the secondary drive, which is the issue. This time it said, "Oh, we suggest you disconnect the the secondary drive, reinstall Windows on the C primary drive, and then reconnect." So that's what I did. Windows works fine, except when I went to see the secondary crucial solid state disk drive. Now it says access denied. I go to security, try to change the owner. Nothing. Everything says access denied.
Oh, you've already tried to change. So access denied usually means we're fine, but you just can't go there. So there's a number of different systems that are protecting that. In a multi-user system, you want that. You want the person who logs in only to be able to access his own stuff, not the other guy's stuff. And Windows is a multi-user system these days, even though you're probably the only person using it. But you did the first thing I would suggest. You went into security, and you tried to take ownership of the contents of that drive. And that's the first thing. It could merely be the operating system is saying, well, you know, this was owned by the owner of the previous account. It doesn't know it's you again. And so it's saying, well, if Tom from the past wants to come open this, I'd be glad to let him in. But who's this new guy? So so for that, you can, and you can even Google this, reclaiming ownership of a folder or a disk. And that I think is probably what you tried, but just in case, Google it. You'll find the step by step. I can't give it to you. I'm running out of time, but you can go through it and reclaim ownership. I think that's what you need to do. Sometimes the issue is a hardware issue where the drive may have a drive password or it's protected in BIOS. But so it could be that, but I think it's going to probably, to be honest, Tom, I think it's going to probably be just that, because this matches the circumstance, which is you created a new account. And but that stuff on that drive was owned by the old Tom. So reclaiming ownership, it's a simple thing to do.
So there's nothing wrong with the hard.
Well, I can't promise that. It could be, but. Usually it would say, if there's something wrong, we would say, I can't read this drive or there's no drive there or something like that. Access, when it uses the word access, it implies that, well, there's stuff here, but you don't have the rights to it.
Yeah. Well, right? When I went into disk management, I don't know if to be stupid, I guess, about this. But anyway, I went into disk management and it said disk management, disk one, which is a solid state drive.
Yeah.
Basic online. You know, D, 100 megabytes raw, healthy, active, primary.
Perfect. F, good.
76 gigabytes raw, primary partition. But then it says initialize. When I click initialize, which is what the message said on the computer, it says access denied.
Yeah, good, because you didn't want to initialize it. That would, in fact, erase it.
Well, I don't care what's on it.
Oh, you don't care what's on it?
No. I just want to get to it so I can use it.
Oh, all right. Well, that makes it a lot easier. If you had something on there that you wanted, you would have to go through some rigmarole.
Oh, no. I hope anything I can do to help, you help me.
Yeah. As long as there's nothing on that, you should be. It's interesting, though, that in Disk Manager, you might need to delete the existing partitions. You have to be using an administrator account for this. I'm sure you are.
Yes.
You might be able to look at that drive, delete the partitions. It's a physical drive, right? Not a logical drive. It's a physical.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Physical drive.
Physical drive. Yeah, go to look at that drive. It's a good sign that the disk manager can see it. That's a very good sign. It means it's there. It's healthy. Delete the partitions. Create a new partition, the size of the drive, and format it, and you'll see it.
Would that be, like, I saw this when I reinstall Windows. You know, you disk zero is this drive zero, drive one, and this is drive one.
Right.
If I just delete Windows, reinstall, and where it says that drive, do I want to delete it?
Yeah. It's a partitioning. It's the partition manager.
Yeah.
You don't have to reinstall Windows to fix this. You could do it from. No. You can do it from within Windows.
Oh, so delete the partitions within Windows.
Yeah, use that disk manager. Look at that disk one. Delete those partitions. Create one new partition. You're erasing the drive. Once again, I want to emphasize that. You're starting over. There's nothing on there you want. That's okay. You're deleting the partitions. You repartition it. create a new single NTFS partition, format it, and it should show up as drive D next time you, and then reboot, and it'll show up as drive D.
Oh, okay. Can I ask you one real quick question? I'm using the 2011 BIOS on the motherboard. When I reinstall Windows, it worked fine. There's the latest is 2014, but, you know, you hear about making a brick out of it if you update the BIOS.
Do it carefully, but it's probably a good idea. Yeah, there'll be fixes. There'll be fixes in there that you probably want.
Okay.
Just be careful. Here's the only thing that can go wrong. Don't follow the instructions by the letter. Think you know how to do, I've done this. I know how to do this and screw it up. Follow the instructions to the letter and don't, whatever you do, don't power down the computer while you're doing it. Make sure it's plugged in and no one's going to come in and unplug it.
Oh, good. Well, definitely don't want that.
Yeah. Well, otherwise, it's not, it'd probably be worth doing. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, I can find how to delete partitions by Googling that.
Yep,
podcast.
Start over. You got it.
Okay.
Thank you. Woo! Thank you to Lady Laura, our musical director. Thank you to Kim Schaffer, our phone angel. James DeRuvo, our official scribe. He's got the official chain around his neck, the scribe's chain with a bottle of ink at the bottom. And thanks most of all to you for joining me each week, because, man, it'd be silly to do this show if you didn't listen to it. So thank you. I'm very, very grateful. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A couple of more calls before we wrap things up for this Father's Day 2020. Judy in Yucaipa, California. Hello, Judy.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you. I have several little questions here. I'm not the most literate person when it comes to computers, so bear with me.
I shall.
Okay. I have a Windows 10 computer, a Dell computer.
Okay.
What I want to do is I want to purchase a laptop that takes all my information with me, and I don't want to have to put a memory stick in it or anything. I want it to automatically go to both computers. Is that a possible thing?
So you want to have, like, you're writing letters or you're designing rocket ships, and you save it to one computer, you want that same data to be on the other computer so that you can just get up and put it under your arm and go out to the moon base.
Correct.
Okay. So that's called synchronization, and it is absolutely doable. There are a couple of ways of doing this. It all requires the internet. You have internet access?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I also have QuickBooks. I want QuickBooks to do the same thing.
Okay. So if you there are third party companies like Dropbox, we were talking about this earlier, OneDrive, that will, for a fee, it's not free, although for most of them you get about 5 gigabytes for free. That may be enough for you. You get a pretty hefty amount for free. You can put data that you want to carry with you everywhere in your Dropbox folder. What that does is it sends it up to the cloud. And then it's available on any machine, and you can even set it up so it automatically uploads and downloads. So that's one way to do it, with a cloud provider like OneDrive, which is Microsoft's company, or Dropbox, which is probably the number one choice. But there are other ways you can do this. A little bit more geeky, I was talking earlier about a free program I use called SyncThing that does the same thing. If when the two computers, it's hard. This is more geeky, and you said you're not a geek, so I'm gonna qualify this, but it's pretty cool. You set it up on both computers, you install it, and then it'll just kind of synchronize over the internet without storing it anywhere, just back and forth. That's pretty cool, too. Now, QuickBooks is I'm say that for other people. I think it's too geeky.
Okay.
It's free, okay, which is nice. It's not really hard. It's at Sync, SYNC. THING, SyncThing.com. Not .com. Wrong. Maybe it's .org, because it is open source. So let me search for this, and I will tell you the right address instead of the wrong address.
If you think the Dropbox, and then how expensive
Dropbox is what most people do. It's SyncThing.net, by the way. Dropbox is what most people do. .net. You can take a look at it if it looks at all overwhelming, you don't need to do it. But I have to say, because it's free And it doesn't put your data anywhere but on your systems. I kind of like it for that reason.
Okay.
So that's what I've started using. You told me you don't want to do sneaker net where you copy it from one on a drive and you don't want to do that. You want it automatic. So that's it's going to need to use the internet to do this. Okay. So, yeah, go look at Dropbox.com. Here's the problem. You said you want to synchronize your QuickBooks. So Dropbox will pretty much has a folder that it syncs. I think OneDrive might be a better choice for you because OneDrive, which is from Microsoft, again, they have a free version you can try before you buy. It's at OneDrive.com. And you can tell it, I want you to synchronize. The problem is you have to figure out where QuickBooks is storing the data.
Okay.
So that's going to be a little tricksy because it's not putting it anywhere sensible. If you can figure out where your data is, then you can have it, that folder, synchronize to OneDrive and then from OneDrive to your laptop. So that would be the other way to do it. Google Drive has a similar solution. What you want is something that will let you choose folders like Google Drive or OneDrive where you can say, I want you to synchronize this folder, this folder, this folder. And that, because you don't want to synchronize the whole thing. That's going to take too long. It's too much. You want to just synchronize the stuff that you know you're going to want to take with you.
Okay.
So QuickBooks is a little tricky because the one on your laptop has to be told. It might confuse it, but it should work. I think it'll work. QuickBooks is you threw me a curve with that one. Everything else should be fine.
Okay. All right. What kind of a laptop is best? And does any laptop have a decent keyboard?
No. No. The thinner, the lighter the laptop, usually the worse the keyboard because keys can't move very far. The best, I'll tell you what my favorite laptop is, which has a wonderful keyboard, is from Dell. It's small and light, but it's beautiful. It's the Dell XPS 13. XPS. And 13 is the size of the screen. They actually make a 15 as well, Dell XPS 13 or 15. I love their keyboards. They're very nice. Lenovo's ThinkPads are also very good. They have they're renowned for their keyboards.
Okay.
So I would say, now QuickBooks, somebody's saying has their own cloud. So you might look and see if QuickBooks will do that syncing for you. Then you wouldn't need to go through something else. You just let them do it.
Okay.
Because they want you, ultimately, they really would prefer that you don't buy QuickBooks on a disk, but instead use their internet version of it. That's what we use here.
Okay.
Then you log into your QuickBooks and your account's stored up there in the internet. So I can tell you're writing this down. This is good.
Yes, I am.
This is
absolutely
good. So XPS, Dell XPS is very good. The 13 or the 15. These are fancy. They're not cheap. They're not $300 laptops. They're going to be a little more expensive, but they're good quality.
Okay.
My day-to-day laptop that I use all the time is a Dell XPS 13, the new one. I love it. And since you mentioned keyboards, that's a nice keyboard. That's a good keyboard.
Okay. All right. That's good.
All right.
Now, what about a scanner, a portable scanner I could take with me, or a printer?
What do you want to scan?
I don't know. People, at the minute I go out of town, somebody wants something, and they got to have it right now.
Epson, our sponsor, makes an excellent portable scanner for about $100.
Okay.
And it's going to plug in via USB, and it's just a little thing. Looks like, I don't know how to describe it. Looks like a typewriter plate. And you know what? Do you remember typewriters? Yeah, it's just about that size.
Oh, yeah.
It's about that size and width. And you just put the paper in and it rolls it right through. Those are very good. And Epson also makes a portable printer, but they make a portable document scanner, the ES50, that is quite good. There's actually a surprisingly large number of these. I guess you're not alone. Are you a notary? What is it that what people demand you scan?
Well, I have a trucking company, and they want all their information. They want it now. They got it. Oh my gosh, I didn't get it yesterday, so I got to have it now. So that's what the problem is.
I love it.
When I get
of
all
course.
This stuff,
so you need a portable office. I get it. You need a portable office.
That's right.
Yeah. And as long as you're throwing it all in the car or the truck, you're okay because, you know, because it starts to get heavier and heavier. The Dell 13 is beautifully light and small, but you could get a bigger one if you want a bigger screen. And since you're not, you know, you're schlepping a scanner and a printer along with you, maybe you might as well, right? You're gonna get a giant suitcase to put all this stuff in. It's a pleasure talking to you, Judy. I have to run, unfortunately.
You didn't answer. It's the printer.
Dell Epson also makes an excellent portable printer.
Oh, Epson does?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Epson's a sponsor, should mention. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a safe geek week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.